magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Tuesday, April 24th, 2018. I'm getting it right today, Marianne.
Hi, Mark. It is.
Hey, good to have you back in the studio.
We've jumped ahead a whole year since
yesterday. Yeah. I don't know if you tuned in yesterday. I was a bit ramped up, I guess, over the Texas Roadhouse in our Singing Men rehearsal. I was excited to see new men join us. But with us being yesterday a week out from the Texas Roadhouse, I was just like all caught up in the moment. And I gave 2017. But I blamed it on Joey, as you know, because he had said
on his
Thursday program.
Well, that's convenient since he's not here.
Yeah, he's the fall guy. It's all Joey's fault because he was saying how he was writing checks with 2017. And I thought, that's kind of odd. I mean, we're all the way into April. And he said, he didn't know why he did it, but just out of nowhere.
Did you know that if you do that, that check won't go through? It's like 6 months that they'll take a check like... dated six months ago. I found that out one time.
Well, I know recently I wrote a check out to a church. And
well, that's dreadfully sad. with the wrong date.
I meant to give a certain amount.
Yeah.
And I ended up just saying $5. And it was supposed to be $500 anyways. And I wrote $5. And I put my line all the way to the dollars, and it held up their whole church deposit.
Are you serious?
Because it threw everything off, and so they couldn't do the whole deposit because mine was only $5 instead of what I had written out anyways.
You had written the $500.
In the numbers.
Yeah, they go by the write-out
part. And so I just wrote $5, and I was in a hurry before church, so I just never wrote $100.
You put in your $5, didn't you?
So anyways, I held up the whole thing, and the treasurer had to call me. Well, what do you want to do? And
great week for them.
I said, can't you? Yeah, I shut down the whole church.
Didn't make that mistake again, did you?
So, oh, well, let's see.
Well, thank you for giving your $500.
Yes, so. I know yesterday we spent a lot of time with the Texas Roadhouse, and our dinner club, but I want to reiterate it in case you weren't tuned in yesterday. We're launching the Great News Radio Prime Lifetime's Dinner Club. And so this coming Monday night at the Texas Roadhouse between 4 and 10 p.m., it's a fundraising night. It's a fundraising night. It's a friend-raising night. Nobody eats alone. We're gathering all of our Great News Radio listeners and Prime Lifetime's readers to come together because 10% of the total food purchase will be donated back to the station. So it's like, I like to eat out, I like to have fun, I like to meet friends, and what a great way for a restaurant to host it and then give 10% back to the station. It was like, gosh, let's do it. So
going
to
raise funds and raise fun.
And raise friends.
Yeah,
we're going to get together.
That's three things.
Break bread together. Very biblical.
Nice.
And so that'll be happening. But as we started the wheels turning, I thought, we should have a series of these. And Nancy Brain, as we had met a few weeks ago, we had her share some of her stories over the air. She really talked about networking and getting people together and not just getting them together, but have some intentionality, a purpose, like some training or a topic or something to get people thinking outside the box or growing. Or being...
That was great. She's very energetic about things like that.
Yeah, a lot of ideas. And so as she mentioned some different things, I started thinking, well, let's establish a dinner club and let's see if I can get other restaurants to do the 10% off and then, work it all out. So on May 29th, Yoder's Kitchen in Arthur, much more to say about that in the coming days. So we're always doing it near the end of the month. That way it can be in the Prime Lifetime's paper all month long and people can view it.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's a good idea.
I'm working that out. Always multitasking those ideas. Then we're hoping June 25th at the Olive Garden in Champaign, July 30th, El Toro in Champaign. And down the road, we're still working out the specifics, but hopefully maybe Hickory River, that barbecue place. It's a big restaurant. That should be fun. The Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
That'll be a fun night.
And we still have August 27th and November 26th. December 17th, that had to be a little earlier because of when Christmas falls. That was going to not work out. So I think the 17th gives people enough time to get out, have fun. And so we'll see if we can find a fun
restaurant.
Go
shop and then come eat.
Yeah, that's right. So yesterday, I guess I forgot to mention this at the end of the program, but I wanted to have you back today because it's been a while since we've had you read anything from your book. You're still continuing to sell copies.
Yeah,
is it this Thursday that you're going to be at Meadowbrook?
I am.
Oh, that's good timing, too. That wasn't planned.
No.
So you're going to be featured during their, it's not their quarterback club, what are they, their champions?
Champions, yeah.
Champions. Well, I have some friends that are part of the quarterback club, yeah. So they're champions club. I don't know if there's still time for people to register, but you're going to read from your book. You're going to talk about it. You're going to share what it's like to be the editor-in-chief of the Prime Life Times, some of your expertise with coaching people. What do you call it? Your personal coach? Some of the other things. You're going to give a little history, a little testimony, share from your book, and then open it up for question and answers. And then there's always a nice lunch. So I think if people are interested in knowing more, they need to call Meadowbrook Church. And it's at, is it 11? What time is that?
I think it's at noon.
Okay, at noon. Yeah. And it's a lunch, and then you're the keynote speaker.
Thank you.
So that'd be nice. So that'll be this Thursday. But as we were talking last week about your continuing involvement with our English conversation classes, those of you unfamiliar, Marianne, let's see, what title do we have you here with the radio station?
We need to figure that out.
You're kind of the editor-in-chief is the preponderance of your work
right
now.
We got that nailed down.
Yeah, we got that
Project
nailed down.
Project manager, I think.
Creative services.
Oh, I like that. That's interesting. Hey, that works.
All-purpose helper.
You heard it here.
Yeah, that's right. You're the first to know of it, as is Marianne.
I heard it with everybody.
Yes, that's right. Well, yeah, there's other people that do that, too. They announce it through Texas.
We have this tendency to do that, don't we?
So the English conversation class, you've been reading this book, and it's the advanced group. They come in here into our studio area and sit around the table. I think you read, usually the first hour you do reading excerpts or a chapter, and then you talk about some of the words and the meanings.
Right, and they discuss a little bit their thoughts about it.
And then you have Rob, you know, your sidekick helping out,
filling
in all the variants of the word or the tense or how it can be an adverb sometimes and a prepositional phrase and all these other things.
And then we study the same words the intermediates do in the second hour.
Yes.
But they have a little different slant in our class because they're really quite proficient in English.
Yeah.
So they really get into the words and everything. Yeah. Robbie had to correct me for the first time ever.
I heard that. He said, you know, I always agree with you, Marianne, but on this, I'm going to, and I was like, oh,
well,
what was that all about?
He informs me that I still have, and nobody in the world except Rob is going to believe this, but I think he's right, a leftover English accent. I used to have an English accent from when I grew up in Africa. And he said, nope, this way you say this one word, said, there's a number of words, but this one, you say it with that English accent. I'm like, nobody's going to believe that.
Did you know what the word
Southern
was?
The Southern came back too strong. I think that word was lettuce.
Oh, yeah, you kind of hold on to the E a little
longer. The T
long.
And the E. He says, that's so English. Lettuce.
Oh, yes.
He said, Americans say lettuce.
Yeah, yeah.
With a D almost.
Yeah.
And an S.
Yeah, our topic actually for the next 2 weeks and this past Thursday, it's on gardening. So we had gardening one, two, and three.
Yeah, that's why we're talking about lettuce. Wow, I should have explained that.
Yeah. Because let us all gather in the name of the Lord today. All right. So I asked you just moments ago, hey, could you read something from your book? And you have now found a story. Oh, the book is called Memories of an African Son. And African Son, S-U-N. And yet it could almost be a double entendre because many of it is a devotional thought where you're dealing with the Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, through some of your messages. But not in
hopefully not just memories. Hopefully I'm still current with the Lord.
Current. And so what's the name of this chapter?
Well, I thought I'd read the same one I read to them.
Oh, from this past Thursday.
From last week. Okay. Yeah, okay. It's chapter 44. It's called What I Learned from the Traders. And that word is traders, T-R-A-D-E-R-S, like traders who trade things, not traitors.
Yeah.
Okay. What I Learned from the Traders. The road in front of our house in Ghana was a dirt road, and many a day I would look up and see a tall figure with a flowing white robe and turban, walking down the dusty road, stopping here and there to talk to people, one of the traders. Many of the traders appeared to be from Nigeria, but some were from Ghana itself. They carried their wares in a large fabric sack slung over their shoulders, and they stopped and dealt with anyone who had the slightest interest. Many people waved them on. No time to trade with the men walking the town with their goods for sale. But I would deal, as they called it. They seemed to find the singular focus of a young girl, now with coffee bean skin and highly sun-bleached hair, intriguing. And I also had a bit of money. My accent by that time sounded as though I originated from England, so that seemed confusing to them, as I staunchly maintained that I was an American. Cross-legged, or on a little wooden stool, I sat at the edge of the blanket they had spread on the ground, the trader on the other side of the blanket, and all of his wares spread out between us, ready to stay for 30 minutes or so.
So you'd literally sit down during this trading exchange.
On the blanket, They would not give up on me, probably because they knew in the end I would buy something, even if it were small. And I, too, didn't give up on getting something at a price I could afford, which indeed was quite small. I still have part of my collection of small mahogany carvings and pretty beaded bracelets and rings. My mother used to ask me how I could stand the back and forth haggling over the price. I did it because I enjoyed their company and the laughter. Also, because it was my one chance to buy something at a price I could pay. We were often down on the streets of the merchants in Accra, especially the lines of shops where our Indian friends and numerous others had stores. These were all stores that opened onto the street with strong, heavy iron gates that were pulled across the front at night. The stores themselves went far back from the opening, large rectangular rooms, some almost dark at the back or lit by lamps. Accra was a port city, and these were import shops. But I couldn't afford anything there. Even though I loved drinking mineral water or sipping the beautifully spiced tea as I sat on the rug on the floor while my parents visited. In one store, I was surrounded by gorgeous hand-woven rugs and other beautiful items from India, carved from teak, and beautiful vases, plants, jewelry, and copper items. In the store we went to most often, there were numerous items of clothing, luggage, and shoes for sale in every corner of the store. Our friends from India, who owned the luggage and clothing store, made us feel almost like their family.
Hey, stop for a minute. So this Accra, that's a seaport city?
Yeah.
In Africa.
In Ghana, West Africa.
West Africa. But these are Indians that are owning some of the shops.
There was a lot of Indians in Accra. Okay. This part of the book is very different from the first part.
Okay.
When we lived in the bush country, way out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. So, yeah, these were from India.
Okay.
A whole lot of people from
India. It's been a while since you've read from this book, and so I'm still in Africa thinking about the bush country. Some of the, the pilots that are coming in and dropping off supplies.
Right, that was very different life.
How do you get to the hospital because it's 5 hours away and all that. Okay.
Okay.
I need to come to your class more often.
You do.
Keep up to speed.
Yeah, we're way ahead here. We're clear up in West Africa on the ocean, 5 degrees off the equator now. All right. So our Indian friends, they really liked my parents, and their shop was a pleasant place for us to visit. It was also one street over from the long rows of red mailboxes, hundreds of them, that went on for blocks and served as the way to get mail in Accra. Across from the mailboxes, people sat at tables with typewriters in front of them and umbrellas over their heads to protect them from the boiling sun. They were clerks, and they would type things for a fee. Going to downtown Accra to get our mail was an important task. We did at least twice a week. Though I could not afford anything at the Indian import shops, with the traders, I had a business. It was clear that they would never go below their lowest price, but it was also clear that I had to get them to a price I could afford. So we would haggle, back and forth, raising our arms in disbelief at the newest price, laughing when we finally came to agreement. You got the better deal. No, no, you did. You've bested me this time around. As it says in Proverbs, "It's no good, it's no good," says the buyer. Then he goes off and he boasts about the purchase. Proverbs 20:14. The traders could often see the change in my hand, so they generally knew how much I had, and I seldom had more. I simply didn't. It was a game, and it was a shrewd business. It was important to them to sell their wares, and it was important to me to feel like I had a place I could actually buy something. But then, a rather eye-opening thing happened. I realized that we didn't need to just use money. I could trade a bracelet I no longer wanted or liked for a bracelet a trader was selling. Suddenly, the world opened, for we were no longer bound by the monetary system. Many of the traders who came down our road were regulars. I grew to recognize them, and I knew their names. The buying and selling of things was a big business in Accra. The huge markets, with vendors set up under umbrellas, in stalls or in the open air, were a sight to see. I don't know how long it would have taken to walk entirely through all of the market in downtown Accra, but if you did, it seems you would find almost anything. Women grinding peppers, stacks of smoked fish, stews, rows of spices, stacks of bread loaves, vegetables and fruits of many kinds.
I'm getting hungry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Unbelievably fresh pineapple and the alasa fruit that I've never seen anywhere else. There were meats, household items by the thousands, garments, colorful fabrics, scarves, headdresses. The list felt endless. And, of course, the country is the second largest cocoa bean producer in the world. Accra and Ghana as a whole had a lively feeling to it. Hmm. Commerce, it seemed, was in the air. Women in Ghana were attuned to business. Our original little college building was rented from a Ghanaian businesswoman. A number of the tribes of Ghana were matriarchal, meaning that the lineage was passed down through women. There were also people who just came walking down streets, generally also women, with huge baskets balanced on their heads, selling their goods, piles of peanuts in the baskets, or high piles of fresh bread or fruits. Mm. Street food in Ghana is an interesting assortment of countless items, whether yam chips, fresh pineapple, often picked that day, or amazing fresh seafood, often gotten that day too. That's not in the book, but that's true. Mm. Sold at stands on the beach. I like the idea of walking out the door and stopping the girl going by, giving her some change, and walking away with a handful of peanuts or some other commodity. I have never been able to learn the exact history behind the white-robed traders of Ghana and Nigeria, how the whole concept of walking down roads with one's wares to sell ever started. I've heard different theories about it, and that makes sense, I guess, because, as is true with most vocations, people are doing them for different reasons. Some are honest, and some are not. Some did not come by their goods rightly, some did. True of Wall Street, true of the local car dealers, true of the traders, I would imagine. What I learned from the traders is that there is more than one way to earn a living. More than one way to do something. That piece of information has come in very handy for me through the years. I find that I like to support people who have little businesses they have started, entrepreneurs who try to drum up income to support themselves, homemade jewelry businesses, fish sandwich shops started out of a kitchen, food stands on the college campus run by college kids, or even people selling homemade cakes and cookies to friends out of their home. Sometimes it's a homespun business hurriedly put together in desperation due to lost jobs, or the need to help a child through college, or sometimes just to simply earn extra money. Some say these little businesses are irrelevant, that they won't support someone through the long term, that they lack a long-term strategy. But they matter, and I like to support them because I know it might help somebody get through this week. And there are parts of this world where that's a very big deal. Hmm. Here's the prayer at the end. Father, I ask that you will always provide livelihood for those I love and for all of your people. Help all of us to be willing to do whatever is before us without worry as to the status or value attributed to it. Help us to value the real meaning of productive work and be glad when we have it. And be glad for food on our table for one more week and for this day.
Hmm. You know, that's a very Jewish way of praying. I don't know if you know that. Did I ever share that? I've shared it over the air before. It models even after the Lord's Prayer. Generally speaking, again, the Jewish people that I've hung around with and talked it over with. But a Jewish person, like, say, Marianne, you came in today and you said, you know, Mark, could you pray for my daughter to get a job?
Yeah.
The Jewish mindset, they hear that. They would then go to prayer, generally speaking, again, saying, Lord, provide for Marianne's daughter and provide for all of those that are seeking jobs. So the Jewish mindset in prayer is, you know, like the Lord's Prayer, give us. It's plural. It's never just, you know, oh, help Marianne's dad or help, you know, such and such. It's help them in their health crisis and all those that are hospitalized. So it's always inclusive.
I did not know that.
And, yeah, it's a Jewish mindset. It's never just for me. And then when you look at the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses.
Wow.
So it's always that plural mindset instead of individualistic like many of us Americans tend to be. And so it's really transformed my praying for many years.
Wow.
So when somebody shares a request, whether it's seeking job or employment or whatever, health issues, I always try to include in all of those that are suffering through that, all those that are seeking jobs.
That's really powerful, Mark.
Oh, yeah, and you kind of had it in there because you were saying for all the families, the small businesses, and it really is a great way to pray so we don't become so self-absorbed or focused just on the one.
And it's blessings on God's people.
Wow. Well, anyways, I read into it right away as you were speaking those words. I thought, yeah, that's inclusive. We should always, when we pray, I mean, yes, there's many times we pray very specifically for a person, but the Jewish mindset or the practice is then to broaden it to all those maybe dealing with that same kind of issue.
Wow.
Yeah, I like that. So I like it almost as much as going out on Monday nights to the Texas Roadhouse this coming Monday night between the hours of 4 to 10 p.m. Yeah, I kind of get excited about this.
Yeah, you do.
Don't I?
You have been for days.
Well, I think because it's like a no-brainer. It's not a whole lot of work and setup, and yet $1,000-plus will be donated to the radio station because if, in fact, the Texas Roadhouse follows through on their intentions, and they said they would, that 10% of all the food costs will be donated to the station. It's like, wow, they set up, they clean up, they do the cooking. And so you and I and Holly and Joey and probably Jason and the other Jay, a couple of different Jasons and other staff. I think Dwayne's planning on coming there. And I don't know if we can get Karen out. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
But if we can get our whole team there, many of the singing men, to greet you, to love on you, to make sure nobody sits alone. So if you come and you say, I came alone, are you sure you're going to have me with somebody? We will sit you with a nice family or some other friends. And
for those who tuned in yesterday, I will tell you that you can have barbecue sauce on your chicken and salt on your baked potato, even if Mark doesn't.
And the tomatoes, when I order my meal, I'll make sure the extra tomatoes
go to somebody.
To you. Yeah, so you can be that lucky person, gets extra tomatoes. So it's a week from yesterday, so it's next Monday. It's the 30th, the last Monday in April. In fact, it's the last day in April, and it's a part of our series. It's called The Dinner Club, the Great News Radio Prime Lifetime's Dinner Club.
We've had it for a week and a half.
Yeah, so it's very
join
good
in.
Club. You can be a part of the exclusive, newly founded group. Next month, May 29th, it'll be at Yoder's Kitchen in Arthur.
That'll be a fun trip. That's a great time to drive down there, too.
Yeah. The 25th, the Olive Garden, the 30th, July. So each month, once a month, near the end of the month. And so more to say about that in the coming days. But show up to our first ever dinner club next Monday, the 30th. And then we'll have materials on where the other restaurants will be in the coming days. So gotta go.
SRN
News won't wait. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Marianne Simpkins with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.
God bless you.